Book Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Michal. We have a very special guest, Paige Rall, who's here to talk to us about her new book, which is a memoir, which is a little bit different from what we normally discuss. So welcome, everybody.
Hello. This is
Michal. Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's pretty exciting. We don't really talk a lot about memoirs and nonfiction, so it's really cool to have someone who's kind of in that area and can talk about it a little bit, because I know we have a lot of readers who like that kind of stuff. So thank you for coming on. All right. So first things first, we're going to talk a little bit about what we've been reading over the last week. So Michal, do you want to start?
Yeah, I am way behind the rest of the Book Hype crew, and I'm still making my way through Queen of the Tearling. By Erica Johansson. I don't know. I'm up to like part three, and it's pretty good. I like it. I'm looking forward to listening to last week's episode and hearing what you guys thought about it.
It's very entertaining.
it's a good book.
Yeah, I definitely liked it. Paige, have you been reading anything interesting lately?
The latest book I've actually read while working on mine was The Fault in Our Stars, and so it was pretty cool because John Green, he's from Indiana, and the girl actually at one point was a patient at Riley, where I'm a patient. So it was a good connection to kind of read the book and then be able to like go see the movie and see Indiana Pacers in the movie and just things that I recognized from my hometown.
Very cool. Very cool. So recently I've been reading, there's an anthology coming out that's edited by Stephanie Perkins, and it's called My True Love Gave to Me, and they're holiday-themed stories, which is really interesting because it's like the middle of August and I'm reading Christmas stories, but that's cool. It's all good. It's a lot of fun, you guys. When this anthology comes out, I highly suggest getting it. It's got a lot of great authors in it. Stephanie Perkins, Myra McIntyre, Gail Forman, Rainbow Rowell. So lots of people that you guys like to read are all in there, and they're really fun, really quirky holiday stories. They're not your typical warm and fuzzy holiday story, which makes it all the more fantastic. I also started reading Winterspell by Claire Legrand, and it's a retelling of The Nutcracker, and it is so cool. Love it. And it's set in the late 1800s in New York. So it's super fun. And then I reread a book called The Longest Ride by Nicholas Sparks because this past weekend I was actually in North Carolina on a set visit for The Longest Ride. So that was really cool, and we'll have some really fun stuff coming up about that one. And it's really cool because it's like cowboys and the rodeo. And for those who don't know, Scott Eastwood, who is Clint Eastwood's son, is in the movie, and we got to interview him. And it was absolutely worth the one-day trip to North Carolina. I'm just going to say it. If you don't know who Scott Eastwood is, Google will be your best friend.
I have a question.
Yes.
This is a Nicholas Sparks adaptation.
It is.
Does he wear a shirt?
Some of the time.
Not he Nicholas wears. Sparks.
I know nobody cares whether or not Nicholas Sparks is wearing a shirt. There were definitely scenes that were going to be shot that later that day where he was not wearing a shirt. Unfortunately, our time on set ran out.
Oh.
But I have been promised that there is shirtless Scott Eastwood in the film. So I think we're good.
Excellent.
You got it covered. and you're definitely going to want to see that once you Google. and then I just got a book in the mail called This Shattered World, which is the second novel in These Broken Stars, which was the first book that we reviewed on Book Hype, or the second book we reviewed on Book Hype last winter. And I'm super excited to read that to see where that story kind of goes next. So
I'm interested in that.
Yeah, I just got it in like 2 days ago. So
cool.
Yes, I have to get on that and start reading it, see how it turns out. Because we were kind of left in this very odd place in the last one. A good odd place, but still kind of like I need to know.
Yeah, so, but it's a different story, right? It's different characters?
It is, but they promised us that the stories were still like interwoven and we would still get the information we needed.
Oh, very interesting.
Yes, so I'm super excited about all those good things that are coming out. All right, so Paige, you are our guest. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is that you write?
So I'm now 20 years old, and I was born HIV positive, and I didn't find out until I was about 12 years old. And At the time, I didn't really understand what it meant to be HIV positive. I knew that this, I quickly learned the stigma that was out there about the disease and was bullied in middle school because of it once my friends began to find out about it. And I just decided that I wanted to take that negative situation and turn it into something positive, which for me was my speaking and sharing my story and my memoir Positive that's coming out. It just, you know, was my way that I turned everything that I went through and decided that I needed to do something about it because the way I was being treated wasn't right.
Excellent. That must be very challenging for being a 12-year-old and discovering this about yourself and then having people find out and respond that way. Very difficult. Especially middle school is like the worst time ever.
Yeah. And I can't even imagine.
So, and you decided to write Positive to kind of share your story. Was it a tough decision for you to make, or did you kind of just, you know, because you were out there speaking, like, did the speaking come first, or did you writing your memoir come first, or how did that kind of work itself out?
My speaking was the first that I started after I ended up leaving the middle school, you know, my final straw. I had a nickname page at the school. A school counselor told me that I could deny I was HIV positive, and the only advice she gave me, you know, it wasn't really the advice that I thought I was going to get from an adult. And so my soccer coach even made a joke that we could use my HIV status to our advantage and the players in the other team would be afraid to touch me and I could score goals. And so those were kind of my final straws. And I left, and after I left the middle school in eighth grade, I just decided, okay, I need to do something about this. I need to change, you know, how I was treated. And so my way was sharing my story. The first time I shared my story, it was kind of like a weight had been lifted off my shoulder. I was really, you know, I found something that I could use that, you know, some people saw it as a bad thing having HIV, but for me, I guess it's a weird way to say it, but I've embraced it and decided to do something about it. And then after sharing my story for a few years, I decided, okay, then what's the next step? And so the next step for me became writing Positive.
So what was that like sitting down to, you know, to write it? Did you kind of start to finish, or did it come in bits and pieces? Can you tell us about that process?
For me, it came in bits and pieces. At times, it was hard writing. There's a lot of things in the book that I bring up and I talk about that I don't necessarily talk about when I go and speak and share my story and educate. And so for me, sitting down and thinking about everything that I'd went through was at times hard. There's parts of the book that make me want to smile, make me laugh, and then there's other parts that, you know, make me want to cry. It's just different parts, but writing it and all, I realized, okay, even though I went through all this, like, this is why I'm still doing it.
It baffles me that you ran into adults that were so, I guess, inconsiderate and almost unkind, because I work as a teacher, so I can only imagine. It baffles me in so many levels. I can't imagine being a 12-year-old and not being able to have someone to turn to in your school system that could help you.
And, you know, I mean, part of the reason this is so great is because it's, like, obviously people should know better, but part of it's just due to plain ignorance, you know, and realize that, like, oh, right, this is something that actual people, humans, have, you know. We have to think about this in a way that isn't, like, pariahical.
Right. I feel like education is the number one key right now. I think it's just ridiculous that, you know, around half of the new infections are between, for HIV, are between the ages of 13 to 24. And so I think for me, it's just crazy being out here speaking to, that's usually the age I'm speaking to. And it's, I feel like they think, you know, it can't happen to me. I don't look this way. I don't do these sorts of things. And I think it's just so hard to get them to realize HIV doesn't discriminate. It can happen to anyone. You can't look at someone and know if they're HIV positive. And they say 20% of the people that are HIV positive don't even know it. And so it's crazy. And education is the key to let people know. You need to know your status. You don't have to look a certain way. Even though now HIV, it isn't a death sentence, it's still, you know, it's preventable.
Yeah, I think you're very right in that idea of educating and being open about it, because I feel like a lot of times it's something that was talked about a lot when it first started to happen, and it was kind of a big deal, and now it's not really talked about at all or all that much, and people aren't open about discussing what it means, what it could look like, you know, how it affects people. So it's great that you're willing to share your story and discuss it and I guess give other kids this opportunity to have a story that could be like theirs, that so they have a place to turn to. That's so important. Can you tell us a little bit about when you go and you speak to groups or I'm assuming that you do like lectures and stuff. What is that like? How does that work for you? What do you talk about mostly?
For me, when I go and share my story, I go and I speak about HIV, and then other times I'm just speaking about bullying. And I think for me, usually if I'm talking about HIV, I go out, I do some HIV AIDS 101. I share my story and talk about just everything I've been through, and this is where I am today. And I always volunteer time for any of the people that I'm talking to ask me questions if there might be something I didn't necessarily talk about, you know, while I was sharing my story. And so, you know, when I talk about bullying, sometimes it's just great for me to be able to share my story and help others and hopefully get them to have the courage to speak out or to inspire them to tell someone if they're being bullied and to know that it's okay to get help. And so for me, I think speaking, it's also became my kind of way of coping. The first time I spoke, it was kind of like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. So for me, I love being out there speaking, and I know writing the book Positive, I've always told myself that if this book can just save just one life, then everything I went through would all be worth it.
Can you tell us about any of those like specific experiences? Have you had anyone like approach you with anything that surprised you, or maybe a positive experience through speaking? Because I know, I mean, well, actually, I can really only imagine that speaking to, you know, high schoolers and middle schoolers, there could maybe be some surprises right along the way.
Yeah, actually, you know, I'm used to getting asked sometimes, you know, the same question. And so during my talks, I always talk and I'm like, I challenge you guys to ask me a question I haven't been asked before. And one kid, I remember, asked me who my doctor was. And I was like, that's kind of a weird question. Like, no one's ever asked me who my doctor was. And he approached me after and he told me that we had the same doctor. I had mentioned where I was being treated at Riley Hospital. And so I guess he decided to ask who my doctor was. And he's from Indiana. And he confided to me that he had the same doctor. And my mom and I were kind of like, you know, that's cool. Like, she's an infectious disease doctor. I thought maybe, you know, something. And we were like, what for? And he said, for the same thing. But he also told me that none of his classmates that were there with him while I was giving my speech, and nobody at the school knew that he was positive. So it was kind of, you know, to have him feel that comfortable to be able to come up and share something with me that he hasn't, you know, none of his friends, none of his teachers know. And I work at Camp Kendall a lot, and it's a lot of the times it's really hard, and it's a hard step for a kid or a teenager to actually say the words, I am HIV positive, or my mom or dad's HIV positive, because of that stigma out there. So to just have that feeling that he felt comfortable to come up and share that with me was just, I knew that, okay, I did something good today. This speech like could have made a difference in his life just because he was able to tell somebody outside of his family.
Can you tell us about Camp Kendall? I remember you spoke about it, I think it was May, you were in Manhattan at a luncheon with Harper.
Yes.
Yeah. And it sounds like a great place, maybe for our listeners who don't know what it is.
Yeah, Camp Kendall, I actually just got back from camp. It was just a couple weeks ago, and so I've been going there since I was a camper when I was 15 years old, and it's a camp for kids and teens infected or affected by HIV/AIDS, so whether they're positive or their brother or sister or a close relative to them is positive, they can come to this camp. And so all these kids and teens ages 7 to 15 are there because somewhere, somehow, we're impacted by HIV and AIDS. And so we come together, and it's just like any other camp. We go to the pool, we play games, we have, you know, dances and carnival nights. And so it's just like any other camp. It just, I know for me, and I'll speaking to a lot of the other campers, it's like a second home to us. We come there and sometimes we only see each other just that one week at camp. And so going there as a camper, and now I'm a counselor there for the 7 to 9 year old little girls. And I know for me, I love going there. I've built such a special bond with the founder and with the campers and other staff members. And so it was just a place where I really finally was able to meet other kids that were going through what I was going through, and they were able to relate. So camp, it's definitely held a special place and helped me through a lot of everything I've been through.
That's awesome. I used to work at a summer camp. It was just a regular summer camp, but still, I understand that coming back together and seeing each other every summer, that's, there's something really special about those bonds that you create with people at summer camp. So yeah. I think that's awesome. Love summer camp. So do you have any other future plans? Because you wrote Positive and you're doing all these great talks and you're out there. Do you have any future plans for writing? Maybe, you know, you've written nonfiction, maybe some fiction or anything like that. Is there any future plans for any kind of other books?
I know for me, I had talked about, and I had an idea of maybe doing kind of a children's book series. I love working with little kids, and at camp, my favorite group is to work with the 7 to 9 year olds. So I thought, you know, maybe I could do some kind of series just, you know, based off of what I've been through. But kind of, so it's basically kind of my book, but, you know, a little, like, girl that's not named Paige and just talks about how you get through certain things, like a first day of school or a first day at a doctor's appointment. And so just different things. I've thought about that. But I know for me, I just want to keep my speaking and I want to keep sharing my story. And I also want to pursue a career in helping in the labs, not only, you know, just educating people. I want to help towards finding other treatments and even help towards finding a cure, actually working in a lab.
That's awesome. I love the idea of writing younger kids' books and having those stories out there too, because I think so often there aren't enough books to help kids through certain things in certain situations, especially the younger they are. So I think that would be an awesome thing to do, having some sort of book like that. That would be amazing.
I'm interested, like, I mean, a lot of authors talk about, you know, writing a book is really like a very personal process, and they learn a lot about themselves. And that can be true, like, even for, you know, fantasy fiction. So did you learn anything about yourself while writing Positive? I mean, you know, a memoir about such personal experiences.
I guess for me, it was kind of like a reflection of everything I had been through and everything I'm doing now. So for me, it was just kind of a reassurance. I'd had some hard times, but I was coming out of it at the top, and I guess I was just able to realize how strong I can be for myself and what things I can get to, and just I was able to let myself know HIV doesn't define who I am. I'm a normal girl. I'm just like anybody else. I just have this thing that, you know, has given me this gift that where I can go out and speak and help others with it. So for me, it was just finding out that, you know, everything happens for a reason. It's just how you take a situation and how you handle it. And I guess for me, I took a situation and I made it into something positive, hence the name.
It's a really great title, because, you know, it does exactly that. I'm like, it's that, you know, it sounds cheesy to I guess point that out, but I really,
right.
Know, I think it's very, it's awesome. Did you think of calling it that, or was that like a publisher thing?
That was, I mean, I had never at first thought of it. And then I really, after a while, I was like, yeah, I was like, that makes sense. I was like, I can see that.
Yeah. And well, actually, I'm also interested, like, you know, what you're from Indiana, obviously, and what was it like, you know, coming to New York, like getting involved in the book scene and you know, meeting with your publishers and things like that?
For me, it was very exciting. I think once I came to New York and I met the whole team at Harper, it was just, I was realizing, okay, this is real. Like, I had talked about writing a book and I'd love sharing my story, but actually being there and having the luncheon and meeting my whole team, I was like, okay, this is actually happening. Like, I was just really excited about everything and just hopeful and just so glad that I had the support of them helping me share my story.
Awesome.
How did that come about that you ended up at Harper? Like, can you tell us a little about your kind of journey to publishing?
So for me, my co-writer and I, she's in Massachusetts, actually, and so we had talked, and I had my agent Molly Glickin, you know, talking, and my book went up for auction, and then I talked with Jennifer and Kristen from Harper, and I just really felt that connection with them, and we talked about, you know, what we see with positive and what we see, you know, with what can happen with sharing my story in the book. And so for me, talking with them, I just knew right away. I was like, okay. I was like, I felt comfortable with them. I really agreed with everything that they saw, you know, with the future of this book. And so for me, it was kind of a just clear answer, like, okay, I want these to be my editors of positive.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, that's fantastic that you felt so comfortable with them. I think that's really important as you're out there kind of looking to find the right connection between you and the editor. Especially in a story like this one that's so personal to you, I think it's even more important.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm going to have to be working with these people a lot. So I want, you know, want it to be a fun and exciting thing.
Exactly. All right.
So, you know, this kind of also fits into a larger discussion, I think, that's going on in the book world now about diversity in fiction and, you know, just, like, books that are for, you know, obviously, you know, race and gender identity and things like that. But something that is overlooked a little bit, and I think that's probably why there's a Tumblr about it, is diversity in terms of ableism and, you know, and just general health for protagonists. So there's a Tumblr called disabilityinkidlit.tumblr.com. And I think, I don't know who, oh, it's right here. Yeah, Cody Keplinger and Corin Duvis. Oh, wow. Corin Duvis and another contributor who goes by Pumpkin on Wheels, but I don't know what her real name is. They run this Tumblr, and I think it's really awesome because they have a lot of books that, you know, discuss these things. They discuss mental illness. They discuss physical illness, physical disability. There's a book I read a couple months ago. I think I spoke about it on the podcast, called Dangerous by Shannon Hale, features, you know, a protagonist who was born without, like, her left forearm. And I just, you know, I love that it's kind of becoming something that's visible in fiction, you know, without necessarily even being defined by anything, but just kind of something that's available for people to identify with. So they have tons and tons of different lists. It's really awesome. So, you know, recently, obviously, like, you know, depression has been something that people have been talking about, some physical disabilities. Yeah, it's just a great resource and a great website to check out.
That's okay.
So, Paige, we have some kind of fun questions that will hopefully allow people to get to know you better as a person and not just about your book and your memoir. So are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the first one's super easy. It's your advice for aspiring writers.
My advice would just be, if you feel that you have a story to tell, if you feel like nobody can relate, that you should definitely write it. You should share that story, because there's going to be at least one person out there that's going through what you're going through, and that advice you give them or your story you tell could change that person's life instantly.
Excellent. Okay, your favorite TV show?
As of right now, I've been kind of I'm on Netflix, I go on binges with TV shows. And so as of right now, House is my one. That's my favorite, but I'm on the last season. So I'm not sure what one I'm going to do next, but I love all the medical shows like Grey's Anatomy and all those types of things.
Excellent. House is very fun. I like House because it's so different from your typical.
Yes.
Yeah, it's. I love that one. Great call.
My mother loves House. Every so often, she'll just be like, "Everybody lies. Dr. House said that."
Yeah, I'm gonna go by his advice. Make things crazy.
Yes, yes, it always seems to work for him. Is there anything else you've been binge watching on Netflix? I know I do a lot of binge watching as well. Like, whole weekends go by, and I'll be like, oh, it's already Monday. I can't believe I spent my whole weekend watching.
I've watched so many, I feel like, on there. I love all the ABC families, like Pretty Little Liars, Switched at Birth, all of those I've seen. I love those.
Yes, those are kind of addicting because you're like, yes. You get them, and you're like, oh, wait, I wasn't supposed to watch 10 episodes. What? Excellent. All right. So who's your favorite character from, we'll do movies, books, and TV. One from each.
Okay.
I know.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah. Everyone I ask this question, they're like, no, I can't pick one.
I'm like, I can't pick one.
In movies, I love Emma Watson.
Okay. In any character or as Hermione or...
I love in Perks of Being a Wildflower.
Yeah, she was amazing. That one, she
rocks that movie.
Yeah.
And then favorite book character?
Yep.
Oh.
I know.
That one's even harder.
I know, there's like infinitely more to choose from, I feel.
Yes. I'm like staring at my bookcase right now, like trying to think of oh, that's so hard.
I know. Well, maybe Mikal can tell us. Oh, yeah, that one can go. Mikal, can you tell us your favorite TV character? Why Paige thinks of her favorite book character?
My favorite TV character. Oh, boy. Off the top of my head, just in terms of, like, shows that are on... Well, okay, so Sansa Stark, obviously, from Game of Thrones. But she, for me, it's more the book character. I mean, I love the TV character, too. I think they do her really nicely, but I think of her more as her book character. So definitely her, but also Gemma Simmons from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I adore her so much. It's maybe a little scary.
Okay, excellent.
Okay.
Come so up with a book one.
All right. Okay, for me, it's a book. It's called Positively. And it's by Courtney Scheimel, and it's actually a fiction book about a girl who was HIV positive and goes to a summer camp, but it's a fiction book.
Uh-huh.
And so the character Emerson Price, it's kind of, I read it before I even wrote my book, and for me, it was kind of like a little bit of myself when I was reading it as she told her best friend, and she went to this camp, and so it was just really cool.
That is so funny. I work with Courtney Scheimel.
Oh, she's like a really good friend of mine. She did piece on me before a few years ago. And so when I've come out to New York, I've met with her.
That's awesome. Yeah, we work at the same writing center. So
that's so funny. Yeah.
Such a small world.
I've noticed that working in like with publishing, everybody knows everybody.
Yes, that is definitely true.
Yeah.
Or for me, it's more like as long as I know Jen knows everybody.
Now. That might be a bit of an overstatement. So do you have a favorite movie character? I think that's the one we left out.
Oh, no, we did Perks of a Wallflower.
Oh, yeah, okay. Movie book, TV character, that's the one we left out.
Favorite TV character.
I know.
Not letting you off the hook for anything.
No,
Jen, do you have one?
A favorite TV character, is that even a question?
Wait,
think about it. Think about it. Who was it?
Oh, man. What shows do you cover?
It's not even the shows I cover. Just think about it. Who do I talk about all the time?
Benedict Cumberbatch?
So, who was my favorite TV character?
Oh, God. Sherlock, of course.
Like, that really? That was the question.
Good show.
Oh, my God.
Right?
It's so good.
I know.
So, show is so good.
Mm-hmm. If you can't think of a TV character, it's fine. We can let you off the hook for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
TV, it's funny because, like, there's such a, like, books at least, like, they'll be a main character, you know, but TV, it's, like, such a vast palette of people.
This is true. I know. I like to make questions difficult, I guess. I don't know. All right. So this is one that we typically ask all authors when we talk to them or interview them, and it's, what one book do you wish you had when you were a teen?
When I was a teen.
Because there are so many, I guess, a lot of times we ask, and there weren't a lot of YA books or books out there that really targeted a teen audience. Like, mostly when I was growing up, there was, like, Sweet Valley High and The Babysitter's Club, which they don't really count, let's be honest. So I kind of skipped over and read a lot of Stephen King and stuff like that. So is there something out there you wish, like, oh, if I had that when I was a teen, it would, you know, I would have loved to have read that. And I know that wasn't all that long ago for you, so this question.
I know, so I'm like, I feel
you're like my age. I already had that. I was in middle school.
This is the problem with interviewing Paige, because now I feel horribly unaccomplished, and just, yeah.
So when I was in middle school,
how about that? See if that one works. I'm like,
okay, that should work. Okay, let me think. I feel like now there's a lot more books out there about illnesses, like telling stories of people like dealt with different illnesses. I feel like it was more like books about, you know, love stories or stories just like in school and, you know, starting high school, starting middle school. It was never, you know, how to talk or how to deal and, you know, real life stories, I guess, like for example, The Fault in Our Stars, it's based off of a story, you know, a girl with cancer, right. And there's other books, you know, my book's coming out there, and there's a few others I've read that I can't think of off the top of my head, but I feel like there weren't as many books out there, you know, educating us on, you know, people with illnesses, they're just like other people and, you know, they can live normal and healthy lives.
I think also, yeah. I think that to use the word again, that positivity was also missing, because I remember, I mean, I didn't really read that much, but some of my friends like would just devour these books about like dying kids and like, but they were, at least my impression was that they were all very like, kind of like, they would take advantage of the situation. You know, it was like illness porn a little bit, you know, not like there wasn't like, like, living wasn't the purpose of it, you know?
I mean, right.
Even, The Fault in Our Stars is very much, like, about life and, you know.
How to live your life, you know, happiness, not, you know, and how to get through stuff. I feel like there was less of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's a very accurate statement to say that up until recently, there wasn't a lot of addressing outside of, you know, a nuclear family, everyone was doing okay. There wasn't any talk about anything to do with mental illness, physical disabilities. Those things were all kind of overlooked. Everyone wanted right. that, like, happily ever after, very vanilla story. And within the last 2 years, I would say, a lot of stories have been told that encompass different people, you know, of all different races, cultures, abilities, whatever. And it's very all-encompassing in literature today, as it should be in our society today. So I think that literature is trying to open up a little bit to what else is out there and be way more inclusive than it had been in the past.
I think more, yeah, that it's the diversity also comes with it. Like, people are accepting people a little bit more for, you know, different, like, differences instead of, you know, everything being the same.
Very true.
Yeah. And not being all exploitive, right. too, you know, because, again, like, when you know, you can, like, have somebody with a disability or an illness and, you know, not have them be defined by that, you know.
Right.
Not have that, like,
exactly.
Okay, here's our episode about this person in a wheelchair, you know. And they're, like, the nicest person ever because they're in a wheelchair, you know? Sometimes a person in a wheelchair had a bad day and they're in a bad mood, you know?
Okay, so what is one of the things you need to function as a writer? Like, when you sit down to write something, is there something you need to do it? Like, we talk to lots of people and they talk about, like, coffee and cupcakes or quiet or music. Or is there something you found that helped you when you were trying to write?
Music, for sure.
Excellent.
I'm very big, like, everything with music, like, it calms me down, you know. I have my music organized in playlists. Like, when I'm in this type of mood, this is what I listen to. When I'm in this type of mood, or when I'm trying to get something done, this is what I listen to. So for me, that was my key thing, was music.
Awesome. Is there a certain song that kind of maybe reminds you of writing your book, or that you felt connected to at the time?
No, I think anything country for me, probably.
That is awesome. So, what is one movie that you would love to see remade? Like, an old movie? Or one movie that maybe you would like to see made today that hasn't been done yet?
The Breakfast Club.
Oh, I love that movie.
I love that movie. I want them to do, like, a current, like, a remake. Not, like, a number two, Because I feel like when they take old movies, it kind of ruins the first one when they do, like, second ones, unless it's really good.
Yeah.
You're cool, like, this generation version of The Breakfast Club would be so good.
That would be really funky, I think. Because you think about The Breakfast Club and when it happened, it was so, like, no tech and just, like, in a library all day. No, I love that idea. I really do. Although touching a John Hughes movie is always dangerous. Like, right. I feel like there'll be a revolt. But at the same time, I think it would be really cool.
Yeah, I feel like either people would love it or hate it. There'd be no in between.
It would have to be like, I don't know. It's a tricky one, but at the same time, I do love The Breakfast Club. And
it's,
I think,
done the right way.
Right.
It can be very good.
I think it would have a lot of offer in this kind of time period.
Yes. Yeah, and it's all about, like, oh, you know, kids, like, they were talking about having sex back then, you know, and now it's like, oh, guys, let's talk about, you know, like, there are a lot of issues that can kind of be, not as an issue movie, but as something that could, you know, kind of, I think, add a lot of new juice to a
version. Yes.
And maybe actually be played by teenagers and not, like, you know, 35-year-olds.
Yes.
With all due respect to Emilia Estevez and you know, all of those wonderful actors.
Judd Nelson is the one that looked much older than
I know. I look back, I'm like, in all those old movies, I'm like, they look so much older than any of the high school kids now. Like, what is this?
Yeah. I think Ally Sheedy was the only one who really looked like a teenager.
Yeah, or I was going to say, in, like, Pretty in Pink, was it Michael C. Hall? Oh, he was in Breakfast Club, too.
Yeah.
He was the only one that actually looked like an appropriate teenager.
Yeah, and it's like, I can't relate to these people. He didn't look any, like, nothing about it was high school.
No.
But it was more college.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I have to say, I mean, how old is Jennifer Lawrence if she's playing 16-year-old Katniss? I mean...
That's
but
true.
At least she looks 16.
This is true. Although I did see like a gift set once of like her as like actually 16. And like, I mean, she had such a baby face. It was so adorable. And, you know, it was just like, right, this is really kind of more what it would look like if actual teenagers were in the Hunger Games. But
yeah.
Still love the J-Law, of course.
Okay. So now we have some fill-in-the-blank questions for you. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. They're not tricky. Okay. You're like, I don't know, Jen. I don't know.
Am I ready? That's good.
If I weren't a writer, I would be?
A singer.
Awesome. If I could have one supernatural power, it would be?
Ooh, that's a good one. Flying. I travel so much, it'd just be so easy to fly myself.
I like that idea a lot. And then my Hollywood crush is
Scotty McCreery.
That is amazing. Oh my gosh, I love that. Why Scotty McCreery?
I actually got to meet him not that long ago. He was here and my mom won private tickets off of a radio show for a private concert with like 100 people. And then we get there, and our name got called out of a raffle to have front, like, row, middle seats.
Wow.
So I was really a foot from the stage just watching him just sitting there singing all the songs. And I think I've just loved country music since I was little. And I remember watching American Idol, and the day he auditioned, I was like, he's going to win. And my mom just kind of, like, looked at me, and we'd watch it every week. She goes, I think he's going to go home this week. I'm like, no, he's going to make it. I'm like, if, like in horse shows, if I could have bet, like, from the beginning, I was like, I had it.
Yeah, I guess so. Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yes.
Very adamant about Scotty McCreery. I love that. That's so funny that you not only got the private show, but then you got the front row seats too.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was so excited. I was like, what? And then got to go back, and I got a picture with him, and it was pretty exciting.
That's awesome.
That is so fun. All right, so Paige, tell us about where we can find you online if readers want to look you up and learn more about you and your story.
I have my website, which is just pagerawl.com. And then I have the social media, the Twitter and Instagram, and that's all just at Paige Rawl. Everything. It's just first, last name on anything, and it's easy to find me.
Excellent. And as all people who listen to Book Hype know, you can find us at Book Hype on Twitter, and look up the articles on Hypeable.com. So Paige,
we'll also be having a written interview with Paige coming up really soon. So
yes,
for anyone who, you know, you're like, oh, this girl is so cool, and then your friends are like, I'm not listening to a podcast, and you can be like, well, here, read this. And then I'd also be like, well, here, read positive.
Thank you.
No problem.
All right, so be on the lookout for our written interview with Paige as well, so you guys can probably learn a little bit more about her and her book, Positive, which comes out in a couple weeks, right?
Yes, it does. August 26th.
Excellent. Nice. So everyone be on the lookout for that. It'll be fantastic and very enlightening, I am sure. So Paige, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us today.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
All right. Until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Nicole.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.